Okay, so Revelation chapter 8. And so we looked at Jesus opening seals of that scroll, and he opened six of them, and then there was that break where there was kind of an additional information session. And now we're going to look at the seventh seal. Now, when the seventh seal and the seventh seal opens the next series of judgments. The same thing with the trumpets. At the seventh trumpet, there's a kind of a break, but then the seventh trumpet opens the next series of the bowls or the vials. It's getting progressively worse. Okay, so chapter 8, verse 1, when he opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Because all the women were late.
I knew he was going to say that. I knew it.
Being the only man here, you know.
Well, I have to stand my ground, you know. We don't know. And there's a lot of speculation. We don't know what that means and what it's for. Just silence for half an hour. Verse 2, and I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and to them were given seven trumpets. Now, just a little note on the trumpets. There's this thing that the rapture happens at the last trump. And there's all kinds of trumpets. And so some people say, well, it must be the last of these seven trumpets. It's not that, because the rapture happens before that, right?
Yeah.
In the beginning already. We must be careful not to make quick assumptions. There's a lot of that in Bible studies that I see people make quick assumptions. So I read there in John chapter 3 that we are born again by water and spirit, and they immediately say, well, that's baptism. No, it's not baptism. It's not talking about water of baptism. It's talking about the washing of the word, because you get saved when you hear the gospel, which is the word of God, and that cleanses you. And we read about that actually in so many words in Ephesians 5, where it talks about the washing of the word. So I'm just mentioning that because people make quick assumptions. And then there are often some stuff that are not accurate. We would like to do things right as much as we can. Verse 3, then another angel, having a golden censer, came and stood at the altar, and he was given much incense, that he should offer it with the prayers of all the saints upon the golden altar which was before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints ascended before God from the angel's hand. Then the angel took the censer, filled it with fire from the altar, and threw it to the earth. And there were noises, thunderings, lightnings, and an earthquake. So, pretty violent scene when he throws that censer to
what's that, like
a
staff, or what's a censer?
A censer is like something that they burn incense in.
Oh.
You see that a lot in Catholic rituals.
They
swing it and it's smoke, yeah.
And it's good to see that this is the second earthquake in the book of Revelation. There was one before in, I think, chapter 6. So I wonder how big that earthquake must be. Probably very.
Yeah, the earth is taking a hammering, for sure. What's interesting is it's talking about the prayers of the saints, and it's mixed with incense, which is a good fragrance. It gives us a very pleasant fragrance, and it is before the throne, before God, and I think that is we should look at our prayers is that it's pleasant to God when we talk with Him, fellowship with Him. And not only that, it looks like the prayers that it mentions here is, remember in when the saints under the altar, the martyrs, were asking, when are you going to avenge us? And it looks like this is maybe a call for justice that's being answered here. So God is releasing his wrath. And this is pretty serious stuff that's going on here. So the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood. And they were thrown to the earth, and a third of the trees were burned up, and all green grass was burned up. Oh. So a third of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass on earth burns up. Now, you know what that means. There's serious devastation coming. And, you know, when all the green grass is burned up, all the animals that feed on grass, just think of that. And pretty violent scene here. Then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. And a third of the living creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed. Some people call this the chapter of the thirds. A third of everything is just getting destroyed here. So this great mountain, it may be a meteorite, who knows what it is, sounds like it, is coming down. A great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. Verse 10. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. The name of the star is Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood, which is bitter. And many men died from the water because it was made bitter. So I'm going to play a little clip here for us concerning this thing. And we could, I don't say make decisions on it. Just put it in the back of your mind. It was very interesting what's going on. I hope the... will catch the... this is a clip from CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network, and it's Tom Horn. He passed away about just over a week ago.
About 3 weeks.
And he's talking here about a vision that he had, so let's listen to that.
Government know about it, and what does the president's new space force have to do with it? Take a look.
Thomas Horn is a prolific author and the CEO and co-host of Skywatch TV, known for in-depth reporting on prophecy, conspiracies, and the supernatural. His recent research covers a subject he says is strange and scary.
And it is going to shake the public to the bone.
The Wormwood Prophecy is Horn's latest book, which thoroughly examines Bible prophecy, a known asteroid, and the impact it could have on all of us.
Please welcome to the 700 Club the author of The Wormwood Prophecy, Thomas Horn. It's nice to have you here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Talk a little bit, if you will, about the dream you had last year about an asteroid.
Yeah. So, well, it was the most vivid dream that I've ever had. It was frankly frightening.
I'm sure.
I found myself on a mountain running with thousands of other people and an asteroid descending down towards the Earth. But when I woke from that dream, and by the way, I have a history with this that goes back to when I died many years ago, and my wife found me dead no heartbeat, no pulse. She tried to resuscitate me. And that, at the same time, I saw myself standing in front of a brilliant light somewhere. Somehow in my mind, I knew that I was standing before God. I knew that he had told me some things and then said, you're not going to remember. And he sent me back. And through my life, several times, incidents have happened in which I go to bed, I go back to that place, I see things. When I wake up, I write them down. And so far, they have come to pass every time. And I've talked about them publicly, so it's been verified that I pre-saw these events. Well, this was the same thing. Went to bed, woke up in this place, this terrible strike on Earth with an asteroid. But when I woke up from that vision, sat up in bed, in fact, I almost fell out of bed, and a single word seemed to be whispered through my bedroom, and that was the word Apophis. Now, I knew that there was an ancient Egyptian god of chaos, a chaos dragon, the enemy of light, called Apophis. I also knew that NASA had named a particular asteroid Apophis.
Interesting.
But I didn't know anything about it, so when I got out of bed, I went to my computer, and I started immediately doing research into the asteroid Apophis. One thing led to the other. Ultimately, it led to the writing of the book, and I became convinced that NASA and other international space agencies are involved in a cover-up.
How did you link this to Revelation 8? What was the connection there?
Well, Revelation 8 describes, actually, the first four of the trumpet judgments seem to be describing the different aspects of a singular event. The first one describes fire falling down from the heavens, catching the fields and trees on fire, which is exactly what would precede the incoming of a giant asteroid, the incoming debris. The second one describes what appears to be a burning mountain that falls into the ocean and wipes out ships. This is the first part of a giant rock that's breaking apart as it's entering space. But the third one, it calls wormwood. And this, too, is like a giant mountain burning like a lamp that falls down. In fact, the Greek word there, a star fell from heaven. The word star is astron, an asteroid fell from heaven. And it has the effect of poisoning a third of the Earth's water. And then the fourth trumpet, the sun, the moon, the stars are a third part blacked out, which is exactly what would happen with all the debris kicked up into the atmosphere from the impact of a giant asteroid.
President Trump has a newly formed space force, I guess it's called. What's the cover-up that you think is involved in all of this?
Well, I don't think Donald Trump is involved in a cover-up, but I do think he is surrounded by a faith community, and many of those are prophecy believers, and he has wisely allowed his ear to be attuned to some of the things they are telling them. And I know some of these people, and I've been told that they were whispering in his ears about Apophis as potentially being the wormwood asteroid of Revelation chapter 8. I also note that as soon as they launched the Space Force, the primary reason of the Space Force is mitigation of near-Earth asteroids. So it's directly connected to this effort to defend the planet. But I noticed that the first thing they did was they dedicated a King James Bible at the National Cathedral, and all commanding officers in the new Space Force have to put their hand on that particular Bible in order to be sworn in to duty for office. So they, too, it appears to be recognizing, right, that there's a spiritual dynamic to this.
You go in, we're touching the surface of this, you go into a great deal of the scientific aspect of all of this, but you say really that it's not possible to mitigate some of these asteroids because of the size that they are. I mean, there's nothing that really can be done to...
That's right. Well, Apophis, for instance, is the one that I focus on in the book. It was discovered in 2004 at the Kitt Peak National Observatory. And at the time, NASA and their NEOWISE team felt that it did have enough of a risk of impacting the Earth. And by the way, of all dates, Friday the 13th, right, April 2029, so 9 years from right now. And so they began doing studies around it. Eventually, though, they changed their mind. They said it's going to come very close to the Earth, but it's not going to hit the Earth, except I talked to one of my friends at NASA and another gentleman at the Pentagon that Colonel McGinnis put me in contact with, an impact specialist, and they said, if you look at what NASA is saying, they're saying that in 2029 it's going to come so close to the Earth, Apophis is, that it's going to take out the satellites that are in orbit around this planet. And they're the ones that are saying you can't possibly say that a rock this big, traveling 28,000 miles per hour, it weighs an estimated 20 million metric tons. If it hit the Earth, it's going to be equivalent to 65,000 of the bombs that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki at the end of World War II. It literally cracked the mantle of the Earth. They're saying that that traveling through tens of thousands of miles of space could, all kinds of things, other debris could deflect its trajectory, and I believe that it is set to impact the world.
Wow.
In 2029.
That's just a little bit of what's in Thomas Horton's book. It's The Wormwood Prophecy. Thomas, talk to me a little bit about what people can do with regard to this. If something so big could be so catastrophic and can't really be mitigated, but could by other means be accidentally move off course close to the Earth or off course close to the Earth, what do we do?
Well, first of all, MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, published a paper just last week in which they said Apophis is a greater concern that is being admitted. There are top 100 scientists that say NASA is involved in a cover-up with regard to this. But what can Christians do? Well, one thing, we can use it as an opportunity, because if it does turn out to be wormwood, which is what I personally believe, we can use it as an opportunity to preach the imminency of the second coming of Jesus Christ, because this would be what dispensationalists would call a mid-tribulation event, right? So the second coming could be closer than what most people realize. The other thing is God himself can mitigate what man cannot. And in the Bible, there is a pattern where it says that these judgments are going to come. You can see Jonah going up and down the streets of Nineveh, right? This judgment is coming, but when from the pauper to the king, they repented in sackcloth and ashes, God delayed that judgment from coming against Nineveh. So we do know that there's a pattern in Scripture in which if Christians will pray, use this as an opportunity to point people to Jesus Christ, use it as an opportunity to preach the gospel, and that opportunity is going to increase because in 5 years from now, people with just semi-commercial telescopes are going to be able to look up into space and see it coming.
Wow. You want to read it? It's called The Wormwood Prophecy. And so thank you, Thomas Horn, the author, for being with us, Dr. Thomas Horn.
Okay, so if he's right.
Major tribulation.
Yeah, right.
That's mid-tribulation, yes.
So if it's mid-tribulation, you need to count back 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. That brings you to 2025. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty close.
It's
pretty close.
Trish thinks it's too far.
Apparently it's, they think it will hit like the northwest coast of Mexico and Southern California, that area. That's where.
So they think the whole thing is going to hit, or it's going to like scrape.
No, when he first came out of this, because we listened to him, he first came out of this. There was no doubting that he was going to hit the Earth. And then NASA started to say, oh, maybe he will not.
I think because of fear.
So they don't want people to panic. Mm-hmm. But if it is what we think it is, and I what's interesting here is the date. It's 2029. So if in that's mid-trib, which mid-trib as we think it is, that brings the start of the tribulation period to 2025. Now, when you look at what's going on in the world, we're heading for some tough times.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So is all of this God's judgment on man, or is God allowing these things to happen that Satan is orchestrating? And when does the Antichrist come?
He's coming in chapter 13. So okay. It's a little later still.
Five more chapters.
Okay, from this point.
So I mean, this could be orchestrated by satanic forces, and not just that God is allowing it to happen.
Well,
could it?
It happened when the angel sounded that trumpet. So it's
God's in control.
God's in control of this. He's judging. This is judgment. The tribulation period is judgment. That's all it is. And God may use different ways to do it, but that's judgment, all of it. God's behind it. It's for all who reject Jesus as the Messiah. Now, as we read in Daniel chapter 9, that all those 70 weeks had to do with Israel. And so that includes the last week, which is the 7 years of tribulation. It's also called by some of the prophets in the Old Testament the time of Jacob's trouble. So it's God mainly dealing with Israel because they rejected the Messiah. But everybody else who rejected the Messiah is included. Because everybody had time. See, when Jesus went to the cross and he paid that price, he shed his blood. The book of Hebrews talks about that we cannot trample the blood of Christ underfoot, you know, disregard it and make it something cheap or whatever. You don't value it for what it is. Judgment's coming, for sure. You'll be caught in this judgment. And that's terrible. You know, it's just beginning to build up now, but it's coming and it's terrible. You know, the other thing is, we saw with the horses, I think the pale horse, that 2 billion people will be killed. 2 billion. We're 8 billion now. 2 billion will be killed. Now, as we move on, you begin to see that a third will be killed. That's a third of what's left over. And every time, so many will be killed. So by the time you get to the end of tribulation, a lot of people will have died. Now, why I'm saying this is you have people, Christians, well-meaning Christians, who firmly believe that there's no rapture, they'll be going through the tribulation. They have no clue what they're signing up for. Because this is not a joke. This is not something, you know, some people, we know some people, I won't mention names, but they're storing up, they're prepping because they want to have food and clean water and all of that to survive the tribulation period. Just the idea is foolishness. Mm-hmm. Just plain foolishness to think you'll make it through all of this. And it's getting progressively worse, you know. It's just terrible.
If I didn't believe in the rapture, I wouldn't want to be try to prepare and draw it out. I would just rather go ahead and go.
Right.
Why would you
want
to be here any longer through any of that?
Yeah. Yeah, it makes
sense. Because they want to wait until Jesus returns.
Well, if they're dead, they'll still be part of that too. So
yeah, you have what they call the preterists. They believe the rapture happens at the end of the tribulation. There's no point in that. You know, rapture where to? Because that's when Jesus comes back with everybody. So there's no point really. And others believe what they call mid-trib or pre-wrath. And they believe the second half of the tribulation period is God's wrath. And he will rapture us pre-wrath. Now, if you read the chapter we're reading now, is God's behind this? When those angels blow the trumpets, the judgments come. So wrath is being poured out already. So there is no, you know, it makes no sense. Things don't add up if you don't believe in a pre-tribulation rapture. Now, the rapture may happen when they're leading up to the rapture. We may go through some difficult times. You know, I don't know if you saw, I posted on Simple Church what's happening in the world, all around the world. There's chaos. There's chaos everywhere. And so things are getting worse, even running up to the rapture, things will become very difficult. When you see, right at the end of the book of Revelation, people begin to call out and cry out to Jesus to come. So that is before he's crying, they cry out before the rapture happens. So things are getting pretty difficult down here. Okay, so where are we? So we were at 11. Let's do verse 11 again. The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the water because it was made bitter. So obviously also poisonous. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck. So just go back to 11 before I forget. Many men died. So we don't know how many, but many died. So if all the water is not potable, then you don't know how many is going to be. A lot of people will die. Verse 12. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened. A third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. So it could be like we just listened to Tom Horn, where he says these are all effects of the meteorite strike, that it's dust and smoke, you know, in the atmosphere. We don't know. That's what he thinks. Now, we've been right in the middle of those fires in Canada a few years ago. Our town evacuated. We had to leave. Everybody had. We did not evacuate, but just about everybody did. And we couldn't see the sun for days, for over a week. Some days there was a little red spot. You could look at your naked eyes, you know. But there was no sunshine. It was dark. So it can have that effect that when the atmosphere is so full of dust and smoke and who knows what else, that the sun will be darkened and so on. So things
so
get
dark.
So I have
dark. A question.
Yeah.
And it's just my thought. If all of this is going to happen, the Antichrist hasn't come yet, right?
No.
So you know how they're talking about one world order. They want it chaotic before the Antichrist comes.
Yes.
So couldn't, like, you know how they do weather manipulation. Couldn't they manipulate a asteroid or something to hit Earth so that causes all of that?
I'm not sure. I know they can manipulate the weather, but I'm not sure they can manipulate an asteroid of that size. That thing comes at such a speed and so heavy.
But they already saw it coming.
Yeah.
It is way, way, way a ways. But they saw the asteroid coming. And they said that it's going to hit Earth. And I think after that knowledge came out, NASA realized, you know, that this will create a lot of panic. You know, say for instance, we all know it's going to hit here.
Well, the reason why I ask that is because I think NASA is a big lie.
Oh,
I think they're liars. And I think they can create whatever they want and say, you know, it was an asteroid and it could be that direct energy weapon and they could make it look like a huge asteroid
with CGI.
Cause all of this stuff.
Yeah, but they
and
saw
usher
it.
Usher in the one world order.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they saw it in that observatory.
They say they saw it.
Yeah.
But do we believe
so,
that they
I believe,
don't want to be deceived of anything.
Yeah, but I believe as it gets closer,
I want my own
more amateur people will probably pick it up.
But I think if it's here in the Word, we can take it that thing is coming.
Yeah.
I mean, something is coming.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think, as you say, NASA, they can create a lot more sides that it's true, but I think a thing of this magnitude, yes. Because in, I think it was in the 1600s when Krakatoa exploded, there's somewhere in Indonesia area, that big volcano. And it was so big that I think for a year the ash and the stuff was in the air. And they had a famine because there was not enough sunshine for vegetation to grow. And that was one volcano that was really big that erupted. And you can Google it and read more about it. So this is quite possible.
Well, that kind of, what you're saying when I ask the question, is this, you know, God's judgment, or is this Satan moving man to do that
Satan
with a direct energy weapon and CGI and all of that stuff? And we've talked about when the rapture comes, how they're going to say it was aliens that came
do all
that.
They will have an explanation
So, I mean...
Yeah, but I think all of it comes at a time when God is releasing his judgment, and whether it's things, catastrophes manipulated by man or natural, doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
Because, you know, God said
it's
coming, yeah. Okay, so verse 13. And I looked, and I heard an angel... it's an eagle, not an angel, doesn't matter, but an angel or an eagle flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, 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 to the inhabitants of the earth because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound.
Amen.
So, at this point, the earth is all, it's just about destroyed. And there's so much chaos already. And now more is coming. So after the trumpet judgments, you still have the vials or the bowls. And it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And, you know, and then the Antichrist comes and all of that. It's God's judgment. You know, and it's terrible. It's just amazing that some people think that they're going to make it through. Just not. I don't think they've studied Revelation well or even read it. So you can just read it and think, you know, it's just beyond anything that we can really describe. Okay, let's go over into 9. We're going to spend a lot of time on this. On verse 1 and 2, really. Because it answers a lot of questions that we might have later on in the book. Okay, so 9, verse 1. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. Now to him. So, because it says to him, remember when we looked at... chapter 1, that the seven stars were the seven messengers or the pastors of the churches. So this is not an it, this is a him. So I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. Now that him, I believe, is Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. Now, I looked that up. The bottomless pit is a shaft of which the bottom cannot be seen. Pretty deep. Verse 2, and he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke arose out of the pit like smoke, the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke. Okay, let's here in the margin where it talks about the bottomless pit, but it says a shaft of the abyss. So I looked into that. I did a little study about this. There it is. 3 pages, so it's not a little study. We're going to look at some things. Just to answer, when you talk about the bottomless pit, just a whole bunch of questions come up. And we'll just spend some time of it looking at it. I'm not sure if we'll be able to do that in the time that's left. But let's start. So the bottomless pit is a shaft to the abyss. We read about the abyss, and we'll read about the abyss a few places still in this book. So the abyss is the holding place for demons and evil spirits. So he's getting the key, and there's a shaft that goes down into the abyss, which is the holding place of evil spirits and demons. Now remember, I wanted to read all of this, but I don't think, well, let's read this in Luke chapter 8. And you can go there if you want to. Verse 26 to 31. I typed it all out to save a bit of time. Luke 8, verse 26 to 31. Then they sailed, this is Jesus now, to the country of the Gadarenes, which is opposite Galilee. And when he stepped out on the land, there met him a certain man from the city who had demons for a long time. And he wore no clothes, nor did he live in a house, but in the tombs. And when he saw Jesus, he cried out, fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for it had often seized him, and he was kept under guard, bound with chains and shackles. And he broke the bonds and was driven by the demon into the wilderness. And Jesus asked him, saying, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," because many demons had entered him. And they begged him that he would not command them to go out into the abyss. So they didn't want to be sent to the abyss, so they asked to go into the pigs instead. And he allowed them. And of course, we know they entered the pigs and they ran off the cliff and drowned, which makes me think that there were suicidal spirits inside this man. So one interesting point is that many demons were in this one man. So what we understand, what we learn from that is that demons or evil spirits, or in the spiritual, there's no space is not an issue. And distance. It's good for us to know, for many other reasons, that in the spirit there's no distance, and many can enter one man, because space is not an issue with spirits. So they didn't want to be sent into the abyss before the time, because their time, and they knew that their time would come where they would be sent into the abyss, and it will be a place of torture, and darkness, and separated from God, and that's where they will be. Now, this is where Satan will be bound in during the millennium, the 1,000 years, where he'll be bound for 1,000 years. He'll be sent in there, and he'll be kept there for 1,000 years so that he will not be able to tempt people and influence people during the time. There'll be sinners on the earth at that time. And you know that Jesus is coming to establish his kingdom, to be a kingdom of peace for 1,000 years, and we will reign with him. So we'll reign over those sinners. So that is the abyss. Then there's another place called Sheol. It's mostly an Old Testament word. It's an Old Testament word meaning the grave, a grave. And, or hell. A New Testament is called Hades. I wonder if we should leave this for next time. Okay, let's look at that. Hades, or Sheol, or Hades, is a holding place where people, when they died, went to before Jesus died and rose again, because that's where things changed. Before he was resurrected from the dead. Also a place of, it has two compartments, if you will, two rooms, and there's a huge chasm between the two. So you cannot go from one to the other.
So that's where Abraham's
bosom. Yeah, we're going to go to that now. So it's a place of torment, but it's also the other side is called Abraham's bosom, or it's a place of comfort. So we can go to Luke 16 and verse 19. Luke 16, verse 19, and we'll read to 31. Now, Jesus is telling a story, and it's not a parable, so this is a true event he's talking about, a true situation that really happened. Luke 16, verse 19. There was a certain man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate. It's interesting that we know the poor guy's name, but not the rich man, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried, and being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried out and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me. Send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, they have Moses and the prophets, let them hear him. Let them hear them. And he said, no, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, if they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. So there you have the two. That's Hades or Sheol. That's the abode of the dead. And that was before Jesus died and rose again. Because when he died, things happened, right? And things changed. And so there's the two compartments there in Hades. Now, let's look at this some more. In Isaiah 61, verses 1 and 2, there's a prophecy of, it's very interesting, of what Jesus would do, the Messiah would do. Isaiah 61, verses 1 and 2. It says that the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to preach a good tidings to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives. That's important. and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn. Now you find the same words in Luke chapter 4. So this is a prophecy of what Jesus would do, the Messiah, when he came. Now when Jesus came, he actually confirmed this in Luke chapter 4. Luke chapter 4, verse 16 to 18. And I'll read from verse 16. So he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up to read. And he was handed the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." So some translations will say the Jubilee, which means a time when people will be set free, whatever debt they had. If they were slaves, they would have to be set free, and so on. That's what he meant. So what's interesting is the word setting the captives free. Now, those people in Hades were there. And they had to be released. They were in the abode of the dead, and it was a place of comfort. But they had to. Jesus came to release them, and from Abraham's bosom. Because now Paul comes in the New Testament, and this is what now happens when a born again person dies. Paul says, and we'll read that. When we are absent from the body, we're present with the Lord. So that's it. No Abraham's bosom. And when Jesus came to set the captives free, he emptied Abraham's bosom, and those people are with him. That place, we don't have to go there, but in Matthew 12, 39 and 40, Jesus is talking about this, where he says, but they were asking for a sign, that he was the Messiah. They were just looking to be entertained by miracles, the Pharisees and those religious people. And he said, no sign will be given to you except the sign of Jonah. And just as Jonah was in the belly of the fish, so the Son of Man will be in the belly of the earth, or deep in the earth, or the heart of the earth, which is the place of the abode of the dead. And that is where Jesus went. Now he went there, and he did a whole lot of things. First of all, he conquered death itself. That's why Paul says that we have no. He says, "Oh death, where is your sting? We don't fear death anymore. Because when it's only our body that dies, we continue to live on." And it's really, for a believer, death is just a transition. You're changing address, that's all. But you don't really die. You're not separated from God. You continue to live on. So that place is in the heart of the earth. Now, let's go to Ephesians 4 and verse 8. Where Paul talks about this. Ephesians 4 and verse 8. It says, therefore, he says, when he ascended on high, that's when Jesus went back to the Father, he led captivity captive. So those who were captive were taken with him. He led captivity captive, and he gave gifts to men. Now, this he ascended, what does it mean? But that he also first descended into the lower parts of the earth. He who descended is also the one who ascended far above all the heavens, that he might fill all things. So there is talking, Paul's talking about this, where Jesus went down into the abode of the death, released those people, and took the captives with him, and then he gives them, he's talking about ministry gifts now, since it's the next verses there. You with me still?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where are we? So saints who die today are present with the Lord. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1 to 8. We need to read that. 2 Corinthians 5, verses 1 to 8. Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 1. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, talking about the body, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. So a tent is temporary. A building is permanent, right? For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation which is from heaven. If indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked. For we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but be further clothed, that mortality may be swallowed up by life. Now he who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who also has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, yes, well pleased, rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. So, when you die as a believer, that moment you breathe your last, you're with him.
So no more Abraham's prison.
There is no other halfway house.
Purgatory or
where you're going to wait or nothing. You go straight there or placed straight to the place of torment. There's two places only. So that is still talking about, I'm just giving some context about this bottomless pit that we heard about. So there's another place called Gehenna. The Bible talks about Gehenna, we'll read about that. That's the place of utter darkness and eternal torment. It's the final prison for all evil spirits, all the demons, fallen angel, Satan, the Antichrist, the false prophet, they're all going there. All sinners, that's where they'll end up.
How do you spell that?
G-E-H-E-N-N-A. It's the final abode of all who rejected Jesus and his blood sacrifice.
Well, is that where, like, Satan and the demon, everything will be, or just...
That's where they will end up.
Is that the same as the abyss?
No.
No.
Jesus
so,
took care of that.
Right? Yeah. He will, at the end, okay, but finish.
So there's another place, though, in Greek word called Tartarus, T-A-R-T-A-R-U-S.
Tartarus.
And I'm mentioning this because we will be reading about this pretty soon. So for this one, we go to, well, let's go first to Jude. Jude only has one chapter and verse 6.
Jude is just before the book of Revelation.
Yeah, Jude is right before Revelation.
Perfect.
No, just one chapter. Jude verse 6. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their own abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. So there are angels. Remember when we spoke a little bit about Genesis chapter 6 and those angels came down, fallen angels. These are fallen angels. These are angels that fell. They didn't keep their proper abode. They left the place that God prepared for them. And they came down to earth and started trouble here. Over there in Genesis chapter 6, and they took human women as for themselves as wives, and they raised offspring that were hybrids. They were half fallen angel and half human. And the Bible calls them the Nephilim. So you know, we spoke about that. So these are fallen angels. No, there are some of them are kept in this place, Tartarus. Now, let's go to 2 Peter chapter 2, just a little back to the left in your Bible. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4. And I'm just mentioning this because we will be talking about this as we work through Revelation. I'm going to refer to this. For if God had not spared the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. I just took that one verse, so it's not a complete sentence, but he's talking about these angels that God... He said he delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment. Now that place is Tartarus. Now we will read about this in the book of Revelation, that some angels are chained below the Euphrates River. There's four of them there. And they're going to be released at some point. So that's why I mention all of this. Okay, so this is just to give some context.
What we have is we have hell, we have Gehenna, we have Tartarus,
Hades
and hell is the same. Hades and hell is the same.
Right. I can send this to you in a PDF if you want. All right, so let's just...
That's the PhD level.
Oh, that's what it's the PhD level. You've got it, Cole.
So Gehenna and Tartarus are two different sections of hell?
Mm-hmm. No, they're different places.
They're different places.
Three different hells?
At the end, everything will be thrown into one, at the end.
Yeah.
So right now they are...
They are different places,
people go...
No, people now, when they die, they go to hell. The other two places, that's where God put some of the bad angels.
Okay. Like levels, right?
Yeah, it's different levels. But hell or Hades, that's a place, if somebody dies now and they die without Jesus, they go to hell.
Okay.
But if you die with Jesus, you're immediately with him in heaven.
Okay, this is just to start off chapter 9, and just that one verse, the first two verses really, where it talks about the bottomless pit, which in the margin says the shaft of the abyss. So, this angel, the star actually, which I believe is Satan, was given a key to that shaft. And he's going to open it, and we'll do that next time. You can read about it during the week, but we'll look into that next time.